Hello.
Hey, and it's the Dice of Screaming. Doing a remote cast today because I'm sick. And I'm Randy. So Randy is sick. And I've got a guest host today, and it's Scott Bonney. He's joining us today. How are you doing, Scott?
Not bad. Better than you.
Oh, well. I didn't feel like meeting in person and getting you sick, but I'm on the mend. Mike's also out for today, so picking up our guest host today. So today we're going to basically bounce the ball around about a topic I think is near and dear to a lot of old school gamers, or at least it's familiar to some. Probably not, I shouldn't say dear. Because the topic we're going to talk about today.
No, familiar, yes.
Familiar, but not dear, because, well, it's, for a lot of people, it's a contentious one. Yeah, I'm going to have a little round robin with our guest today, which is Kapani. We're going to talk about psionics. So that's going to be the topic today. We didn't have one last week. And pretty much we're going to go for free form it for a while here. Yeah, words. So we're going to talk about psionics and the reason why it's contentious. And we're going to cover some of the topics, not only just about its history, but why a lot of gamers seem to have psionics falls out of favor with them. Why it doesn't really do anything for them, I guess, is one way of looking at it. I kind of make a lot of fun on behalf of grognards who say, like, oh, hey, well, you know, I don't like psionics because it really destroys my immersion of fantasy. And, you know, maybe that's a little bit of a trope, but I'll put it like this. You're in a world with floating eye monsters and multi-headed dragons that breed different forms of energy. It shouldn't be that much of a jarring topic to deal with mind magic, but I get it that it's like going to a bar and you're expecting to see a heavy metal act and Bon Jovi shows up. I mean, is Bon Jovi terrible? Well, yeah, in my opinion, I really don't like much Bon Jovi does. I like his guitar work, his guitarist, but not much of a fan of his ballads. But that's just me. But if you wanted to show up and say, like, hey, I want to listen to Cirith Ungol tonight, and Bon Jovi showed up, yeah, you'd be a little disappointed. So I get it. It's not everybody's flavor. But what's been your impressions with psionics, Scott? Why is it carried with you for all these years that I've known you?
It just appealed to me more than magic. It almost seemed like it was the first kind of magic that humans in the fantasy realm would come across or begin to understand.
Mm-hmm. So was it, there's been a lot of novels, I guess, the Dereni by Catherine. Is that Catherine Kern?
Catherine Kurtz.
Ah, thank you. Yeah, my bad. Yeah, Catherine Kerr. He has. She has the Saint Calmber and a couple other recurring characters in then those novels. But yeah, they're kind of an overarching theme of humans who have fled persecution of science, and so they try to keep it under control. And rather than just removing themselves completely, they reduce their technology to a sustainable level of near medieval with much more advanced medicines, and of course the talent, the art, as it's called. And that's an interesting take on it. I guess I would magic, I suppose I see as an art of itself, but I might differ a little bit with the view that it's the first magic, but it's more innate or inherent, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
So while we'll talk about psionics, we're basically going to cover it in just the terms of AD&D. Other games have attempted to do it in the past. There's one called Psy World from Fantasy Games Unlimited, which I only saw advertisements for Dragon, which, but it was intriguing. A kind of a dystopian science fiction world where, of course, psionics are being persecuted or regulated at least. And you're obviously a Psion trying to make your way through that life. There's also GURPS Psionics, which I guess the reason why it sticks out for me is because it was the first supplement that I'd come across that dealt with Psionics as a topic rather than just as an add-on. That no matter what world you were playing in or what game, you could just tack Psionics onto. For instance, even Worlds Without Magic, because, well, I think you were saying it pretty well, that Psionics were the first type of magic that humans would come across. It at least seems natural, right?
Right. More inwardly focused than external power source like magic.
Right, it comes from within. So yeah, let's talk about that. The origin of psionics itself, obviously the word comes from the psyche, psychikos, which is Greek, and of course the letter psi, which is the 23rd letter. Pretty much the psyche was also a deification or personification of the soul. What would begin as our early antecedents of the psychology, the study of the mind, with Freud and Jung and later Campbell, you'd start to see like the idea of the id, the ego, and the superego. So psionics was first explored early in the 20th century when they started talking about things like ESP. And when we say the word ESP, we associate it primarily, at least in D&D, the early editions of spell, as a way of reading thoughts. But actually, ESP is meant to encompass what is an anomalous phenomenon, which is a mouthful to say. But what it means is that telekinesis, precognition, clairvoyance, these were all ESP, extrasensory powers, and they were, it was a term used to put it all under in there, including things like telekinesis and other anomalous, unexplained phenomena. But the word psionic became put into play with Campbell again, and with the idea that it was a discipline. John Campbell tried to get psionics placed in a term all of its own, like bionics or, oh goodness, words. Yes, they're there. Other things like cryonics and other onics, radionics. He tried to place it in the science because apparently the biochemistry could be quantified and therefore measured. And if it could be quantified and measured, it could be perhaps regulated or even enhanced. And so obviously the ideas were that if you could move something, use the power of your mind to manipulate an object, you could project that outward, you could do other things with it. And apparently like that's where the term extrasensory perception or ESP started to be used a lot. So these are all buzzwords, and this is pretty much just talking about the preamble of what the term psionics means. And it pretty much fell out of favor in about the late 50s, early 60s, when it was pretty much discredited. It was right up there with Dianetics and other pseudo-scientific stuff like the Shaver stories, if you're familiar with Ray Palmer's, which would make a nice episode to cover. But basically, it was discredited as just a bunch of beliefs and assertions as pseudo-scientific or anti-science scientific nonsense that used some terminologies that science would be familiar with. But that's where we get the term psionics, and where did psionics originate from? Scott, can you help us out on that one? Where did psionics first appear in D&D? We had the D&D game in 1974, 75.
My first encounter with psionics was in the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons Player's Handbook, Index 1.
Oh, yeah, the appendix, yeah. Yeah, psionics first made its appearance in 1976 in Eldritch Wizardry. It was the third book for the little white box set. And it incurred a lot of the use of techniques, including the attack and defense modes. But for a lot of people, like you just said, the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, back in the Hoary Appendix,
Yeah.
Tucked way back in there, right next to the Bard, Appendix 1, there is the Psionics rules. And yeah, it was a thing. You rolled, everybody had a chance if you rolled double zeros on percentile dice, obviously. If you rolled just the true zeros, you had potential to be a psionic, and then you would roll to see what you would get. Now, of course, your stats, the higher they were, intelligence, wisdom, and charisma in that order, mostly intelligence, then wisdom, and then charisma as a tertiary, helped influence the results. And if you had 18 in all three, technically you could roll a 91, 92, 91. Yep, 91 through 00, you could be a silently imbued character. And so you'd record down your character sheet. Now, a lot of people, and especially DMs, when they'd encounter a new player and they say, yeah, my character is psionically active or has psionic potential, and they talk about what they rolled. That was one of those things where the appendix was consult your DM before use, because the character you save might be your own.
No.
Well, yeah. I mean, nobody would ever cheat in character creation, right? I mean, you know, you.
Nobody would nobody ever power game. No, nobody would ever power game like that.
Yeah, definitely when you ran into somebody who was in junior high or high school that claimed that their paladin dual class magic user was a psionic potential. And, you know, you kind of ask, is your character's name John Galt? Okay, well, yeah. So, yeah, there was kind of like I was a special boy kind of character to having psionics. And so it was a little cringy, and as the term is used nowadays. But yeah, even back then it was cringy. You're like, yeah, psionic, sure. But that was taken care of in first edition. Dragon Magazine number 78 came out, and that introduced the psionic character class and also talked about the Dreni of as in Kurt's novels.
Mm-hmm.
But it specifically dealt with the psionicist as a class. So now no longer having to roll potential, you just simply chose to be a psionicist, but you still had to have pretty good ability scores. And again, they cleaved pretty close to the idea of intelligence, wisdom, and charisma as being your primary stats. They provided you with a little bit extra boost. I'm not particularly aware that the psionicist came with an experience point boost, but who knows? It's been a bit. I always used to carry a copy of the Psionicist, just photocopied in my folder, just so I'd always have the Psionicist close by, so we wanted to use it. But let's talk a little bit about Psionics in first edition. So for a lot of guys or gals or folk, for a lot of gamers starting out early in the first edition days, it was rough going with psionics. It was kind of like when you started a psionic combat, you had to do a rock, paper, scissors shuffle. So what was it like for you playing a psionist in a lot of games? What did you think was fun to play a character that basically got taken out of combat and context and put into a new arena? Like, hey, I'm going to attack you with Eagle Whip. Oh, yeah, well, I'm going to put up Thought Shield. Oh, all right. It sounds exciting, but this also sounds like a term of psychology on the self-analysis.
It was a bit nerve-wracking.
Nerve-wracking, okay. Yeah, because there's a lot of charts, you know, that if you have the first edition bedroom.
Yeah. You had to think about what you thought your opponent was going to what a psionic attack power your opponent was going to use. So you had to choose your best defense to thwart that attack and do the same thing. What kind of defense are they going to choose? So you choose the best attack to overcome their defenses.
Right. And early on in the original appendix, you rolled for your psionic powers. You rolled what attack modes and what defense modes you had, because as in everything in first edition, it was all about the combat.
Mm-hmm.
So you might just have one attack mode, and you might have, well, they always gave you two defense modes. And the first edition, first level Psionicist was just like that. They had one attack mode, and they had two defense modes. And you had a number of psionic points, which occasionally went up. And that's the other thing that I think turned people off about psionics was it used psionic points. And a lot of people talked about using spell points in D&D. And I know Tim Kask on his podcast goes into deep detail why he was it was a bad idea and why psionics it was terrible because it used this. Hey, you know what? That's good. I think that's a perspective that was at the helm of TSR, but as we all know, the gaming was changing a lot faster than even the folks at Lake Geneva who were playing the game or mostly playtesting a lot of these cutting-edge ideas before they were released in the wild. It made the cut into the player's handbook for whatever reason, and people ran with it. And obviously, like in Dragon Magazine 78, which was that was in the 80s, early 80s, 83, I believe. I don't remember what month. But I remember I had those weird flying fairy dragons on the front cover. That's what I remember.
Yes.
And very surreal, very fitting for science. But so Psionic Combat was pretty much a rock, paper, scissors game where you would use things like Psychic Crush,
Second
which was
crush.
devastating. There was only one defense mode versus a Psychic Crush. I squeeze your mind, make your head explode. That's scanner stuff right there.
It
And
is.
that was also big in the genre at the time, movies like Scanners. And what was it? Wasn't there another movie out at the time? I'm sure there was probably Monday night movie of the week.
Yeah, Scanners was the big one because it was a not a blockbuster, but it was supposed to be a triple A movie for the time of the late 70s. With cutting edge special effects of people's heads blowing up from the psychic powers being dumped into their brain.
And of course, you can't forget the "Get Out of My Mind" from Dune.
Yes.
Yeah, you can definitely get psionics were prevalent because, as we talked about earlier in the episode, psionics were kind of brought out of the fore of science fiction. It was tried to be studied as a scientific way, like parapsychology was, but wasn't really accepted, but the term stuck in science fiction for quite a while. A lot of people wrote ideas about how psionic potential was developing in humanity or how it could be harnessed, where maybe even magic or witchcraft or prophets, oracles came from, where they were once sometimes worshipped and often feared, would be persecuted. So that led into a different take on psionics as kind of a well, it was both a blessing and a curse because once you were psionically gifted, you were set apart from humanity. That you could manipulate other people's minds, read thoughts that people would want to keep private. And they were all privy to you. So people feared and distrusted you. And unless you were around others who had the same abilities or could at least defend themselves, then there would never really be an accord. And that's an interesting thought I don't think is really developed well outside of its science fiction stories, at least in gaming. But I think that in essence, since you are in a world full of wizards who can cast fireballs and lightning bolts and presumably read minds as well, I don't think psionicists specifically would be that much more different or viewed that more differently than anyone else, other than the fact that perhaps psionics is different than magic. And that's where I want to talk about is that's the other part I think that a lot of people look at. Psionics is different than magic. It's not the same.
I would agree. It is not the same. It's close. It resembles it, but I don't think it is the same as magic.
Right. And then you look at things like with Illithids or Mind Flayers in classical D&D. They're very magic resistant. Presumably they come from another dimension or alternate reality where they're not only the dominant life force, they have they've overcome any other physical limitations of a magic and sorcery, and now they are a force unto themselves. They're highly magical resistant. Magic doesn't work on them very much at all, but their psionics function perfectly. And that's a big thing that I think a lot of DMs didn't like, is if they had something like an anti-magic cell, that suddenly psionics would still function into that. Mm-hmm. And there was some, I think one of the early spells, Globe of Invulnerability, psionics couldn't affect. And so there was some back and forth, like what would a helm of telepathy do to a psionicist or a psionically active character? Would telepathy work on them? Would you have to use an attack mode? Does telepathy give you an attack mode versus a psionicist who just uses mind bar and shuts down all mind reading? I mean, yeah, some of it's self-explanatory, but there were some gray areas. And so it made for some sticky, sticky rule conversation. So anyway, I've been just... I'm going to give hand this over to you just right before we're going to transition. So first edition lasted roughly about, you know, 10, well, if you took it all the way to the original release, at least 13, 14 years. And then second edition came out. And pretty soon, second edition came out with a complete Sinuses handbook. So why don't you talk about second edition when it took over? Or came out, how it changed the way psionics was approached.
It changed. You got more psionic strength points, so you could do a little bit more, but the powers also cost a little bit more than what they did in the earlier versions. So really, you didn't come out with any more. It just seemed like you come out with more psionic strength points.
And yeah, they definitely dialed up the numbers. Where I think in the early first edition, one of the contentions was, like, I kind of lost track on it trying to talk about some of the history. But yeah, a lot of players started with, like, psionic power points. And literally psionic combat was not hit points to hit point. You drain psionic, psychic points to maintain your defenses or hold your opponent at bay. And it sort of represented the kind of struggle, I guess, if you looked at, like, the old original Star Trek series, when those two psychic guys locked up in combat and suddenly, like, the screen would polarize and colors would juxtapose with one another and the dramatic music would play. Like, that was what I kind of imagined silent combat to be like. Maybe you pitched it differently, but that's just what I threw out there. No, two titanic wills pushing against each other. And it was only for those two participants. Everybody was like, what's going on here? It's like, you know, look, it's a placid sea. It's the most intense submarine battle you'll ever see today. But everybody's on the surface is like, what's going on? It just looks like a normal day out at the ocean. Well, yeah, it is. But underneath the surface, there lurks a titanic combat. If only you could see it, you would be really impressed. Like, yeah, it's kind of like esports in that way, I guess. You have to participate. But yeah, they gave more signing points, but they also changed the system up on. Instead of just being like, oh, hey, there's an add-on with the psionicist class as an afterthought, and everybody else who just rolls psionic abilities out of the old player's handbook, you're still valid, but you're called wild talents.
Which makes more sense.
Well, yeah, they always called them that right from the start when they came out with the Dragon Magazine 78. They had already said that psionics were... the psionicist was a professional where everybody else was kind of dabbling in it or half-trained. The psionics were a serious attempt to open up and uncover the potential of the mind.
Right.
And the second edition, Complete Psionicist Handbook, what did it change? Besides just giving more power points.
It codified the powers into disciplines. Mm-hmm. So now you had a telepathy discipline, so anything that dealt with communication or reading somebody's mind or along those lines, they were now in the one discipline. And it gave more variety of powers than what was listed in the... first edition handbook.
Well, yeah, the Players Edition, Players, the Appendix 1 in Players Handbook was just kind of like an addition. Here's some Psionic ideas that we had from Eldritch Wizardry. And we pretty much, it was pretty much the same thing. A little cleaned up, I guess. But yeah, the second edition book put them into disciplines. And they put, they linked them with three stats, primarily Constitution, Intelligence, and Wisdom, but also rather than just the tripartite of the soft stats of Intelligence, Wisdom, and Charisma, they went with Constitution because was it Psycho?
Your inner power or your fortitude, your ability to withstand stressing your body by expending, by projecting your powers outside of your body.
Yeah, and the but they still kept with the basic first edition standard combat, Psionic combat, with still the five attack modes, which resemble a Union psychology course. Psionic Blast is your attack mode, Mind Thrust, Ego Whip, Id Insinuation, and Psychic Crush. And I always like reading the terms of these. The Psionic Blast is a wave of brain force, much like stunning news to the mind. It is costly in attack point expenditure, but is the only psionic attack which can affect non-psionic creatures. And it's in a cone, of course. Mind Thrust is a stabbing attack which seeks to short the synapses of the defender. This attack is individual. Well, of course it would be. Ego Whip attacks the ego, either with feelings of inferiority or worthlessness by superior or megalomania. Wow. Unwanted thoughts, inappropriate at inappropriate times. Id Insinuation seeks to loose the uncontrolled subconscious mind of the defender, pitting it against the superego. Ah, my nemesis, my own id. And of course, Psychic Crush, which I squeeze your mind. Is a squish of brain is a mental assault upon the neurons in the brain, attempting to destroy all by a massive overload of signals. And of course, to defend yourself, the psionicist or psionically active character could project themselves with a mind blink, which is just there's nothing here, and white blank white piece of paper, not even three hole cut, it's just a plain white sheet of paper. Thought Shield cloaks the mind is to hide first one part, then another. Where is my mind? And, of course, Mental Barrier, the carefully built thought repetition wall, which exposes only that small area. An Intellect Fortress is a defense which calls forth the powers of the ego and the superego to stop attacks. You shall not pass. And ultimately, the Tower of Iron Will relies only upon the superego to build an unassailable haven for the brain. So as we discussed with the rock, paper, scissors, yeah, you move Mind Thrust and you have you're an Intellect Fortress. Well, you've just opened yourself up to attack. Haha, you have fallen for my brilliant yet cunningly laid trap.
I also want to point out that with that early edition, you had a special chart for the attack versus defense modes.
That's what I said.
Yeah, to see if you get a bonus or a penalty to your roll.
Right, and you would, depending on what attack was employed versus what defense, you sometimes could go right through, or in most cases, it was very costly. You could use Psychic Blast just to attack all the time, but yeah, you also caught your friends, and so you were kind of a liability. But yeah, it looks like we're running a little short on time. We've been eating it right up, so thanks a lot, Scott. I've been doing a whole lot of talking, and you just kind of sitting there listening. No. Kind of like you're listening to the podcast for me, but I appreciate it. But I'll tell you what, when we get back, we're going to get back into it with the second edition, talk about the later editions, though, including fifth edition and Pathfinder. So we're just going to bid you adieu, and we'll be back, so stick around. Hey, and welcome back. Hey, we're here talking Psionics with Scott. And speaking Hello. Of Scott, He just appeared. Hey, how you doing, bud? So yeah, well, before we went for the break, we were talking about second edition, the Complete Sinuses Handbook, and all the fun stuff that happened in first edition. So first edition was just kind of a hodgepodge of different mechanical ideas. A weird rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock signed combat system with lots of points to use your powers. And so second edition came out, introduced the proficiency system. So why don't we talk about that with the Complete Sinuses Handbook.
Yes, it was the opposite of the normal attack rules used in second edition.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning a one for a normal attack or for a melee attack is bad and a 20 is good, but the proficiency flipped it, being 20 bad and one being extremely good.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't a brand new system brought in to handle psionics. They used the existing proficiency system, and you just had to get used to a good roll was low in psionics and a bad roll was high.
Right, but every power, like in first edition, you just spent the points and the power went off. Now in the second edition, every power needed to be manifested.
You had to manifest it, which means you had to make your roll to manifest the power, and hence the proficiency check.
Right. But it was tied to a stat. Well, it was like the proficiency. It was a
right.
You use one of the six disciplines. So if you use telepathy, more appropriately, you would make a roll depending on what it was, either a penalty or a bonus, depending on what it was. And you would roll die 20. And if you rolled low or underneath the number, adjusted, that would then, with the appropriate one, which was usually, for most of the time, telepathy was just intelligence or wisdom. But charisma could, or constitution could also be used. Now, that would change with the later editions, but this pretty much, when they divided everything into disciplines, you had telepathy, psychoportation, psychometabolism, psychokinesis, metapsionics, which were the higher end, which were basically you had to have both a combination of powers to get into the metapsionics. But you also had metacreativity, which was basically the enchanting item of psionic powers. And of course, the clairsentience, the boring stuff, the clairvoyance, the precognition,
remote viewing, clairvoyance,
your future,
psychoportation,
mm-hmm.
ability to teleport or dimension door from one place to another, and my favorite, telepathy.
I kind of was more of a psychokinesis, you know, fire starter,
yeah,
that kind of stuff.
There's nothing wrong with that.
They had energy missile, which, you know, you had me at energy missile. Whatever you want. But mostly, a psionicist who specialized in psychokinesis was known as kineticist.
Kineticist.
And that'll show up a little bit later. So I'll put a pin on that one.
Put a pin in that one.
Yeah. So Complete Sinuses Handbook was pretty much required. I think the Dark Sun campaign box set came with a copy of the Complete Sinuses Handbook because you needed it. Because
it wasn't optional there. It was mandatory.
Everybody had a psionic ability. And that kind of put it to on terms with other ideas that always had, like, everybody in a magical kingdom had a magical talent, like in the Xanth novels. And I'm not going to talk about the cringe factor on that one. I like to use the word cringe these days. Yeah, but like in Piers Anthony's novels, The Xanth, I thought it was always unique that everybody had a unique and magical ability except for the one guy who didn't.
Oh, he did.
Well,
he had one of the most powerful ones. He just didn't know it.
Well, right. I mean, you know, there's a whole analogy that can be made there. But yeah, Piers Anthony, not like Ayn Rand, not a terrible person. Just, you know, If you've read the Xanth novels, you know. Besides just the puns, there's a little weirdness we're lurking behind you. But we're not going to focus on that. I just want to make a mention of it because some people do tend to point that out from time to time. I tend to kind of just, you know, it sometimes just got it like King Arthur from when he talks about going to Camelot and Monty Python, the Quest for the Holy Grail. Xanth is a silly, silly place. Let's not go there.
Yes,
it is a silly place. So, but we talked about the second edition, and boy, what second edition took a. They did not, with the Sinus Handbook, they just didn't even veer away from it. They went whole hog, head first into Dark Sun. You're like, yep, you're going to need this. You're going to have to learn the Sinic rules, and you're just going to have to deal.
Yep.
So they just threw you in with it. Here's a copy of the Sinus Handbook. Have fun. I don't like Sinus. Well, tough toenails. You got to learn.
This world needs a cleansing.
Well, it needs Sinus, too. Because magic don't always work, so. But yeah, it was a tough, pitiless world, and so into this pitiless world, you must take your Sinics with you. Now, the Sinics handbook was not optional. Sinics were not optional in Dark Sun, but all the other campaign worlds, it was. It kind of hemmed and hawed, like Greyhawk says, yeah, Sinics is semi-optional, but it's heavily implied that it's going to be here. But it's not very common, so you ignore it. And I found a lot of that's why I make fun of Grognard, is because being an old-school Greyhawk player, you know, you had me a Psionics. I mean, I had to learn it. You know, when I looked at the entry of the Mind Flayer and it said, you know, attack modes I, J, and K, and I'm like, okay, I don't even know what those mean, but it sounds pretty brad. I mean, he's using numerals, Roman numerals, to attack me with, so yeah, that's a pretty intimidating creature. And when I learned what those attack modes and defenses were, I learned that the Mind Flayer was kind of a pretty tough creature if you were a psionically active character to mess with. And there were many other psychic horrors lurking around. And of course, the Sinus's Handbook had those as well. And Dark Sun introduced. Well, they talked a lot about how much, what was the name? Well, it was Athos, wasn't it? Well, that was the name of the world.
Athos, Athos.
Athos. It's like how important Sinics were to everything, because literally people, the academy, magic itself had been regulated to two types, the preservers and defilers. And since almost everybody associated arcane magic with defiling, they weren't well liked. If they were tolerated in certain cities under sorcerer kings, yes, you could expect to, well, you could live in the shadows of a protection of a sorcerer king, but if the sorcerer king's attention or queen was ever diverted for whatever reasons from you, or that protection lifted because you displeased them, well, you would obviously pay a horrible price at the hands of those who hated and feared you. Yes. But the academy, the Will and the Way, as it was called in Athens, established a psychic presence that was almost neutral, almost like a druidical path, where all sorts of people from all classes, from all castes of society, were allowed into the academy to learn Sinics because it was a gift. That was the foundation.
Yes.
And so that was the first time you've seen a real serious treatment like inside the game of acknowledging Sinics as a whole. And I think that is what it didn't translate well out of Athos. People just kind of kept it there. And then later, second edition would change. They'd go kind of like a revision. And they decided to revise the Sinics system. And that ended up to where they had what mental armor classes now and mental Thakos. And you said it changed a lot of stuff. Can you give us I know that you and I have discussed this many times before, but I guess some of our listeners out there, why you didn't like the changes.
Well, I played I liked playing a Psionicist specifically from the telepathy discipline because it kind of reflected more real life into the fantasy setting. Because you don't know if somebody is a Psionicist who's walking amongst you, reading everybody's mind they come across. Nobody has any idea. But when they revised it and they brought in this mental armor class, everybody has a mental armor class, whether they're psionic or not. So now you have to make a mental attack roll against a target that you want to surreptitiously try and read their surface thoughts. And to me, that implies an immediate, they know something's going on if something is attacking them, even mentally. That takes all that subtlety right out the window. It irritated me. And I was able to go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, no, no, no. No, no.
I was just going to say, we had tracked down one of the authors of that revision, and I try to present my arguments about the subtlety is gone. Now, when you make a mental attack against somebody, they're aware something's going on. You can't use that subtlety anymore, and they just kind of dismissed my concerns and didn't address it at all.
Yeah, I mean, if I remember, like we were at one of the, even was it Lansing Con or Marmalade
Marmalade
Dog?
Dog.
Yeah, okay. And it was Bill Slavicek was there. He was put in charge of the revision of the Dark Sun. Of course, that's where there's actually a sea on Athos. But I don't get into that too deeply. Yeah, he did dismiss it. He just didn't. He was like, well, it's kind of a concern because not a real concern because this is the way the game is going to play out, and this is we wanted to make it easier. So what I was trying to eke out of you earlier with the system was you had to initiate in if you weren't going to attack somebody psionically, you were going to initiate with or interact with them mentally. You had to use a ability called contact, and it was pretty much every almost every power except the physical ones required you to use contact.
Yes.
And contact established a link mentally between you and the mind that you wanted to interact with. And sometimes it could be beneficent, sometimes it could be malevolent. It was basically up to the user. But for the most part, people were not aware that they were being contacted. Unless they had some type of magical defense up, certain spells like non-detection and some
Mind blank.
globes of vulnerability. Yeah, mind blink and globes of vulnerability. Well, yeah, good luck running around with mind blink until you're like 15th, 16th level. But oh yeah, I just got mind blink up. Yep, really? Okay, well I'm leaving.
I'm done.
Somebody's capable of just throwing mind blink up at when you don't want to mess with them.
Nope.
By and large, but could be a magic item, I guess. Anyway, the premise was that you had to use contact to establish some type of connection. Literally, that's
Yes.
what the name says, contact.
Contact.
And so, like when you use the psychometabolic power, like to heal somebody, you have to have physical contact, so that's not a big deal. And if you're
No.
doing something on yourself, you of course you don't have to contact yourself because you know where you live. You don't have to look for your own address. And using clairsentient powers, you're not really interacting with anyone, but you're manifesting something in the greater time scheme, whatever that is the meta clairsentient power. The meta of the clairsentient power, I should say. Sorry, hard to
Yes.
talk with trying to keep from coughing. So you didn't need to make those, but contact was used in almost every form of telepathy.
Yes,
And
it
so when
was.
you want to, yeah, and then when you had to make an attack roll, it's basically like coming up and somebody like, okay, I come up and I grab him. Yeah, he didn't grasp that was part of the problem. It's like you're asking to make the same type of attack roll that you would as shooting with an arrow or grabbing them
or stabbing them with a dagger in the back.
Exactly. But I think what they were trying for is to make it easier so you didn't have to use contact all the time, so there wasn't like two rolls to make a power work. Whereas most of the time in Sonics, if you're using a remote viewing or like a clairaudience, clairvoyance, when you were using those, you just rolled and rolled under your stat, which was wisdom. And if you rolled, depending on in each power had, depending on how power it was, had a penalty from negative or from zero to negative four, with negative four being like, this is really tough.
This is really tough.
And you could have other factors on there, including like how far you can pass. And if you wanted to look back in time, the farther back in time you look, the better the roll got. And so that chart was kind of nerve wracking. Like negative 50. Okay. I mean, what? Just say I can't do it. Okay. We did. Negative 50. All right.
Negative 50. Negative 50 to your roll.
You're looking back to over 10,000 years ago.
Okay. Yeah, so I can't that's do it. Happened. Nope.
But yeah, the also it had Sinuses recovering PSPs, because that was this big thing, both in first and second edition. Sinic strength points, PSPs. How many PSPs do I have? I recover 3 PSPs per hour unless I rest. And then you could use a Sinic proficiency to increase those. And you had certain things like. What I also like from the second edition is we wrap it up here on this one was things like hear light. Huh? Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
You hear, see noise. What? I can see noise. Yes.
Hear light. The one of the best defenses against a cockatrice or what's that other one?
Well, not a cockatrice, but a basilisk.
Basilisk. It gave you a bonus to your saving throw because you weren't using your eyes.
Well, yeah, you could literally mask up and hear light and feel where the basilisk was.
And not take a penalty to any attack rolls, physical attack rolls.
Yep, and then, you know, you could go all the way up there and finally... When you became 20th level as a Sinuses, you got 10 Sinuses, 20 type devotions. So you pretty much had that. But the book was full of 150 Sinuses and powers and devotions. So, yeah, no two Sinuses would be alike, literally. Yep. Like, you also had things like psychic surgery. Hey, can you remove that one memory from my mind like it never happened? Yeah, just like it never even happened.
Just like it never happened. Just... gone.
But now I want you to do psychic surgery on yourself and forget that you did psychic surgery on that one thing.
Sorry, that I can't do that.
So yeah, just like Dragon Magazine number 78, Dragon Magazine 174 came out with Are You Having Bad Thoughts, which was about psionics and Ravenloft. And that was quite an expansive chapter. I remember that did bring up some interesting things because Ravenloft, the setting of Gothic horror, would take that and run with it completely. And then they talked some more Dark Sun stuff. And yeah, then they went through the Will and the Way and the changes of the psionics. And we've already discussed that. So let's push it into high gear and get into third edition. So third edition came out and they, right around 2004, came out with the Psionics Handbook, and they introduced the Psychic Warrior, and the Sinuses was now called the Scion, and the Wild Talent was called the Wilder. And they had some prestige classes like the Soul Blade and
Soul Knife.
Soul Knife. Sorry.
Yeah, Soul That's Knife. Right.
Do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
And they kept with the disciplines, but now they expanded them out. To the six main stats rather than just the constitution, intelligence, and wisdom. Whereas, let's see here, what did they say? Clairsentience was linked to wisdom, and they were called a scion who specialized in clairsentience was known as a seer. Metacreativity was linked to intelligence and a scion who specialized in that was known as a shaper. So those began to take hold that scions were more, they could be general. And they were basically the meta psionics. And these were mostly telepathy. That was typically what people thought of when they thought of a scion was a telepath.
Yes.
But psychokinesis were known as a scion who specialized in psychokinesis was known as a kineticist.
Kineticist.
And that was linked to constitution and psychometabolism, was known as an egotist. What? Egoist. And they were linked to strength, psychoportation. A scion who did that was known as a nomad. And psychoportation was linked to dexterity. And telepathy, of course, was linked to charisma. And that was known as a telepath. So you had generalists, just like with wizards, in the form of magic. And I think they did a wonderful job. But the problem was is that that book came out right at the tail end of third edition before they revised to 3.5. Once again, those revisions. But this time, the revision brings some good things rather than bad. They made the soul knife. Did I get it right?
Yep.
Okay. They came out with the soul knife as a class, as a full 1 through 20 class rather than just a specialized. And the wilder became a fully vested class in and of itself, as well as the psychic warrior, which the psychic warrior was unique in that they had powers of a psychic, of a scion, like they could engage in psychic combat, but they got rid of the psychic combat, all that stuff like intellect fortress and psychic crush. Those were just attack mode. They were just psionic abilities now. Anybody could use them.
Yeah.
But a psychic warrior was a little bit better at attacking others psionically as well as fighting psionic or physically. But they were limited. They could not gain the heights that or depths of the sciences that a discipline that a scion could.
It was almost like blending a scion with a fighter.
Right.
Got the best of both worlds, but you weren't really as good as either one separately.
And so this really started to push the envelope of what psionics could offer into a campaign where you could run just a strictly psionic campaign where with Dark Sun. And and now it opened it up with even outside of Dark Sun because they came out with the Elan race, which was approved for Dark Sun. They were called the Athasian Elan. But this also came out with third edition. While it would be short-lived, it wasn't too short. It had a good reign, but the Complete Psionic, which was a third-party publisher, which is a massive book, cost almost the time $70. I got mine for $70, but it was like $100 to buy. It was just not published in great numbers. But it was called The Complete Psionic, and it was by one of the authors, and of that, I think was it Hurt? No, it wasn't Hurt. Oh my goodness.
I don't remember because I never picked that book up. I could never afford it.
Well, yeah, it was huge, but he was all over the place. Oh goodness, I can't remember his name, but yeah, it was written by him, and it put everything back in there, and it basically made the scion class called the Erudite, which put it on par with the wizard and the sorcerer. They finally just, you know, free of Wizards of the Coast restraints, like the scion could never eclipse what a wizard could do. The Complete Psionic really gave several others called the Erudite, which was their form of our Archmage. When you became an Erudite as a scion, then you were truly, you have arrived. And also the psychic warriors became Psy Knights to give them their power. But they still kept with the Soul Knight from the Wilders. But then we get into 4th edition, which changed psionics to disciplines again. And the disciplines now just, you picked a discipline, that's what you got. But they included the Monk as a psionic class. And I included the what would basically be the scion was changed to the Ardent. The psychic warrior changed to the Battle Mind, and of course the Monk. And then as a wild talent was the lurk. So I kind of thought that was cool, but I really didn't play a lot of fourth edition, so I don't think we can authoritatively speak on it other than just like conjecturally. Like, yeah, it sounded like it was pretty cool, I guess. I don't know. I
Yeah,
didn't play fourth edition, so
I didn't play fourth
I mean,
edition
they
at all.
change it. But then fifth edition came out with the Mystic, which you could use the pretty much the Mystic gave some of the previous versions a nod, like the Psychic Warrior for fighters, the Psi Knights and Soul Knights for rogues, the Psychic Soul for sorcerers. And I mean, the Mystic was basically the Scion, but now it was given a cooler name, which I kind of like. Not gonna lie, the Scionesses, I always thought it sounds. When you say a psionicist, like, what does that mean? Like, you're a magic user. Okay, so does a magic user view themselves as a wizard? Perhaps. Do they view themselves as a sorcerer? Well, maybe. I mean, it depends if you're using level titles or not in your game. But let's be real here. There's no real difference between, in first edition, between a sorcerer and a wizard, right? Okay. And then the later editions, they would make that definition. But a psionicist, what would they call themselves? Would they call themselves, I'm a psionicist. I'm this guy using a early 1920s century kind of occultist
Title.
spook. Mystic. Yeah, Mystic. You're starting to get it. Yeah,
Mystic. Yeah.
right. So I thought that was what probably most psionicists really call themselves. I'm a mystic. And for most people, that would give them, like, okay, yeah, I get you. You could also call yourself an oracle or a medium, and that would be just completely fine. Everybody would understand that. Like, you use the magic of the mind. Ah, yes, okay. So the average commoner can relate to your character and fear them. I guess.
Fear the power.
Fear the power of the mind. That which can think can also destroy. But yeah, fifth edition seems like it picked up pretty well. They carried with it. And the Soul Knight's always been like, that was one of those things where it just came into being. I think nobody really planned for it, but it really popped from third edition and 3.5, where they just gave it a full class. Like, ah, quit kidding around. Just play the Soul Knight. Y'all love it. Because the Soul Knight was just a person who just did sneak attack damage psychically to you. Hear me. And,
There was that little quibble over Soul Knights when they first came out, too.
yeah, they had a power that basically was a psychic attack, but it was a physical attack. So,
If a creature had a touch attack, did they automatically get that touch attack on a Soul Knight?
because the Soul Knife uses a touch attack, so yeah, there was that little kerfuffle, but I think this house ruled that out. But I always liked the Psychic Warrior in third edition, and I see that they kept with that with fifth edition. And of course, there's always been psionic items. If some people, I guess, confuse, like, is the Helm of Telepathy a psionic item? Well, yeah, I mean,
Yes, it's also a magic item at the same time.
but when we were talking about the Kineticists, Pathfinder would finally come out with their psionic, and they just basically said it's an occult power. And much like the third edition, your attack modes are just abilities that you can use. You can upscale them, downscale them if you want. If you don't have, you decide what at the time you manifest the power, what level it is. And so you can move it up or down if you want. So that made it pretty versatile and gave it a different flavor from playing a sorcerer or a wizard who had to prepare or just spontaneously cast in those areas. So yeah, that was cool. But they also came up with a class, well, it's called Kineticist. So they really went whole hog with that.
Yes, they did. And everybody loved the
Well, at least in first edition, some people did. But
Yes.
it's telling that it was so much loved that it came back in the remaster before the remaster did. So the Kineticist is here to stay. But oh, it looks like we're getting for time, so we're going to head for our extra innings. So we're going to wrap it up in just a minute, but stick around for our extra innings. So stay tuned. And welcome back. Yeah, so we're landing the plane now. Ate up a lot of time talking about the various editions from second, third, fourth, and fifth. Yeah, we didn't really have a whole lot to say about fourth because, you know, I have a Wikipedia entry that tells me some stuff, and I don't have any other context to link it to.
No personal experience.
Yeah, we were talking about the kineticist and it's, you know, coming back, and you know, I think the Scion, they've just said in Pathfinder 2 is just the occult, uses the occult spell list. And I think that they'll eventually come out with something for it sometime or another. But yeah, psionics is definitely a well-defined inside D&D, and its scope and the measure of how its impact has loomed large, not only on the periphery of the player's handbook, like where it was submarged into pressed into the margin linea of the player's handbook in the appendix one.
Right.
Yeah. It was put off to the side, and it's loomed large in a lot of people's imaginations. And I think that's because it provides a different experience than your typical fantasy. However, I think a lot of the reaction, the adverse reaction it has, especially from the old guard, which, well, let's face it, we're the old guard. There are a few older than us. We have some elder statesmen among us, but I mean, if we weren't first wave, we were second wave. We were tip of the spear on the second wave. We were there when the magic was written. You don't have to quote it to me. I watched it all transpire in front of my own eyes. But I think that a lot of reason why the Grog Knights don't like it particularly is because the term psionic is kind of off-putting. It doesn't sound very fantasy. And as we were talking with, like, the mystic, I think Wizards of the Coast hit it right on the head. Whether you call them the mind mage or even going with the telepath or oracle or seer or whatever. Giving them a title akin to having a mystic, that's it pretty much into a more fantastic idea. Just like, well, I always was underwhelmed by the term magic user, which could literally be anything from your traditional pointy hat wearing wizard with stars and moons on his robe to a sorcerer, necromancer, any kind of spellcaster or rogue. And I think that the psionicist was a little harder to pin down. What makes a psionicist a psionicist? What's a psychic warrior? What's what makes a character unique? And how would you even explain a soul blade to anybody outside of that experience in third edition?
That would be, yes, you just said it right. That would be difficult. Sorry, how do you explain focusing your mental energies to create a short sword that you're going to attack somebody with?
Well, yeah, figuratively, you're running off a comic book character, Psylocke, where she created psychic blades and was an assassin. Yeah, there's a whole lot to that. And I think the idea of psionics is literally the power of the mind. That says it pretty well. I think it's an apt title, but it doesn't lend itself well to fantasy. I think that's one of the things. It's kind of clumsy. It is, and I think a lot of the systems are clumsy too. And I mean, it's a broad category to fit in, and how do you make it work? And more importantly, I think psionics is best represented in D&D with some of its most fearsome opponents, the Mind Flayer, the Illithid. Even like the Thought Eater or Intellect Devourer.
Yeah, that'll give somebody nightmares. Thought Eater. Oof.
Yep. It's a duck. It's a platypus duck.
It's an ethereal platypus duck that eats psionic energy and spells.
Yeah, you're like, I don't even understand what this group, the concept is, let alone what, why, well, why is it a skeletal ethereal platypus duck? I guess I don't know. It's a platypus. It's a thing. It's scary. And it wants to eat my brain. Okay, well, that's all I needed to know. I'm going to kill it with fire. It's ethereal. You can't. Oh, gosh. Darn it. Earl, you can't kill it with fire because it's ethereal. Oh, can't kill it with fire. Time to run. Get out of here.
Only if you can attack something on the ethereal plane physically can you do that. Which I think Sword of the Planes lets you do that.
Yeah, you could do also Power Word Kill. Yeah. But if you can cast Power Word Kill, Thought Eater's last year, the least you worry that day.
Yes.
But yeah, Psionics, it has a long history, and that's what we wanted to convey, and I think we did it pretty well. I appreciate you hopping on and helping me. I just don't want to get you sick. Normally, I'd invite you over, and we'd do it in face-to-face, but I had a little bit of a clash today, but yeah. High on, or mentally altered. I can't say high. I shouldn't say high.
Mentally altered. Cold meds.
Yeah, on cold meds. And just not feeling it. Not feeling bad. It's not COVID. It's just a crud. Seasonal change caught me off guard this time. I usually don't get too sick for too long, but this is sticking around for a little bit. Which means that my normal horse-like constitution is holding, but if it were a miracle for the rest of you, you'd be dead by now. It lingers on. Either it really puts me down for a day or two and I'm back up, or it lingers trying to cling onto whatever my antibodies are. View my internal, the battleground that is my internal space. So, with crush that said, oh, yeah. This is an unceasing, unending war. going with the psionic theme, though, I think that one of the best things about psionics is that the people enjoy it, really enjoy it, and it's a good personal experience for a lot of people. What would you say has been one of the best expressions of psionics in these past editions, Scott?
It doesn't, the newer editions don't have the same feel that it had back in the second edition when it started to hit. I thought it really hit its stride there. Mm-hmm. But I understand the changes they've made, because you don't need an entirely separate system to encompass it. So I see the move towards spell slots as a natural progression of the way they've gone and handle it just like a different type of magic. It just, to me, doesn't have that same feel. It's not as, I guess, visceral. It's about the, is the only thing that I can say. And the change isn't bad. Don't get me wrong. It's just not the same. It doesn't have that same initial feeling that I had when I first tried it out in second edition.
Mm. So what do you think Sonic should go from here? I mean, we're seeing like the second edition remaster for Pathfinder. We're seeing whatever the new edition of D&D is going to be. What would you say going forward would be the path for Sinus? Should it be another system?
No, because you don't want to overly complicate a system, because the player's got to know it who's going to play it, and then the game master has to know basically all of the systems. So the game master's got to know every single system, how it applies, mm-hmm. how it doesn't apply, and how to interpret it to fit into his vision of that game world.
Uh-huh.
So if you add a separate, distinct system for a different kind of, for lack of a better phrase, magic system, I don't see that happening. It's not conducive to the game master. It's not conducive really to the publisher, and it's not really helpful to the player. I see it still evolving as a separate kind of, or as a different kind of magic.
Okay. Yeah, even though one of the big tenets of psionics is it isn't magic. It's a natural function. Technically, everything that you can do can be done with psionics. Like your thoughts, you can project your thoughts into another person. You can perceive the thoughts into another person. If you have better control and awareness of your internal workings of your body, you can physiologically make changes to yourself to improve yourself, to heal yourself and possibly others, or change yourself. The good old body weaponry and all that is a reflection of that. And I think that is what the concept of science is. Now, that does it grow out of that? Because magic is a part of reality in that area. Yeah, that's a whole thing. It's kind of like how, like, undead are, if you cast detect magic, undead are natural in Pathfinder. They're not magical. Now, they can be made by magic, of course. Ritual can bring them into being. But they are, the dead are a natural part of the world. It's like, oh, well, you know, finally somebody got around to defining that.
Yeah.
Because the supernatural is part of the natural. So, yeah, psionics is, breaches, I think, or bridges that gap between the physiological natural world and the supernatural world. And I think it is a, it's a good blend, and it's interesting because it gives you a grounding in both reality and science, along with the speculative and unknowing nature of what the supernatural elements of the world are. Like, magic is just basically a more codified rule system for explaining, like, what magic is. What is magic? Well, it's whatever I want it to be. And there you go. That you just defined magic in the best way possible. It's whatever you want it to be. And psionics is more related to something that is what we perceive as possible. So, yeah, throughout the ages, I think the psionics has endured for a very important reason. It is unique and it has a fascinating aspect. Some people see it as jarring, and I think maybe that has more to do with the name. But as is more of a, like a scientific approach to something that is not really scientific or proposes a lot of science. So with that, I guess we wore that topic out. We definitely beat it to death, and it's time to put it to bed. So I too am going to join the land of winking and blinking, drink a little bit more broth, and then I'm going to go take a nap. So I appreciate you, Scott, hanging out with me, and it was good chatting with you, although it's more like you kept me company.
Yeah. Sorry. No, you get on one of those rolls, and I am loath to try and interrupt your train of thought.
I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
But I appreciate you giving. I hope I gave you enough time at the end there to express yourself.
Oh yeah.
All right. So we're gonna cast off here. So we'll see you next week, folks. So take it easy.
Well, everybody have a good one.